You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasson Securities. And David, we haven't spoken since something came out on Friday afternoon. And it was all about MTN and Telkom getting together. And I thought to myself, I saw the Telkom share price going up 26.08% on the day. And I thought, doesn't this smack of a monopoly here? And will it get through the authorities? What is the story? Please tell me the whole thing from soup to nuts.
So I think everybody's discussing that. And it's quite an interesting debate because Telkom maybe have 10% share of the market, but they can't go anywhere. And between Vodacom and MTN, you know, they massive, have the muscle to expand, which I don't think the lesser players have got, whether it's Cell C, you know, Cell C is really far behind, but also Telkom. And it raises the question, well, what do you do? Yes, you know, they are monopolies. They're very big players, both MTN and Vodacom. But if you don't merge Telkom, Telkom will just fall away because it can't fund the same kind of expansion that MTN and Vodacom. In meaning that you have to provide the same service that the two giants do off a lower base.
Yes.
So how do you address that? So I think that's a very strong case to allow this to go through, you know, to support. On the other hand, yes. You know, it does make them powerful, and of course, no one else can come in. But no one else can afford to come in. So you've got this kind of conundrum, and there's a good chance that this can go through. You know, I think they would have checked these out before they made the bid or before they made approach and said, hold on a sec, can we get through the Competition Commission? You know, can we get through that? And they must have thought, we can, we've got a strong argument. And I think there's validity in that.
And also, David, I don't want to be cynical about the way business works, especially in Africa or anywhere else in the world to come to that. I'm sure that a couple of people from MTN sat down with whatever minister it was or whatever inside it was and said, listen, this has got to go through because of this, this and this. And I think because of the major shareholder of Telkom, they may let it go through because obviously the share price has gone up 26% and may continue to go up should there be a bidding war or something. So I do think there's a vested interest for the major shareholder of Telkom to let this thing go through. What do you think?
I think you're right. Listen, you know, Telkom are still shareholders. the government's still shareholders.
Precisely.
So I think there's a good chance. Alternatively, you know, it's Telkom. Telkom are battling because they're still forced, because of legacy issues, to run the fixed line business, which is killing them. You know, it takes up a lot of money and provides no income. On the other hand, they're growing the mobile side. And slowly, the mobile will offset those losses. But it's not a great business model. And Sipho Maseko, did a really splendid job in steadying Telkom and so on. But where's the next move? You know, I always think in terms of global issues. You know, today you're in a global world and you've got to build up local giants. You can't think of it regionally. So, you know, what's the use of weakening both MTN and Vodacom, which might take away from the service that they provide? You know, we want an international service. That's what we want in South Africa. And we want the people who, mobile operators to provide that. And they need lots of money. So if we get 5G and we get all modern technology, we've got to make sure that the service providers can give it to us. I'm not against, you know what I mean? Somebody explains it like Eskom. You only need one Eskom. You don't need two or three or four or five Eskom. Maybe in this country we do. But you know what I mean? Or there's only room for a couple. So I think you're right. I think this has got a very good chance of making it.
I've got 5G suddenly. I mean, I signed up. It cost me for television an unlimited access, phone calls, everything. and it costs me, I think, 54 euros a month. That's not bad, is it?
No.
I mean, it's super fast.
That's pretty good.
It's super fast. I mean, what do you pay in South Africa for the full service? I mean, I've got, as I say, I've got television.
I think, it might be around that or more expensive. I'm not quite sure, but the point is that we've got to have high quality service. We've got to compete with the trends overseas. You know, you can't fall behind, because what's going to happen is that all the modern technology will be designed. You know, your smartphones, your televisions, your laptops, whatever you use, iPads, and that will be designed for high quality, high speed data services, voice services, what other services. So we need powerful players, and we need rich players who can keep pace. And I think that's why, you know, the smaller operators will fall aside. They just do not have the pockets, you know, to keep up. This is a high, intense, you know, capital intense business, whether we like it or not. It's and also people want that data for nothing. They don't want to pay for it. They want it cheap.
This is the thing, David. I mean, you have to keep on upgrading. You have to go from 4G to 5G to 6G in a couple of years' time and whatever, and you have to upgrade your towers and stuff. But your margins are falling all the time. You have to find somewhere. I mean, it used to be voice. Then it was SMS. Then it was data, and obviously still data. And they've got to constantly try to reinvent themselves and see where they make their money. And it's an extraordinary business, and it's so costly. So I think MTN have been quite clever in grabbing the extraordinary network that Telkom has built over the years. Yeah. For whatever reason they want it, I don't know.
I believe they've got the biggest fiber network, so hook onto that, and it places them well. What they do with the fixed line business can slowly provide the services, but downgrade it all the time. So anyway, I think they didn't go into this eyes wide shut. You know, I think they went in knowing that there's a good chance of doing it.
Okay, that's that story. Not many other corporate stories out today, but one story that is South African is the South African 10-year bond yield, 11.06%, David. Yeah. I mean, this is a massive, massive thing. And if you look at the US 10-year treasury yield, and just you don't have to be a genius to work it out, it's 2.99. So 2.99% for the United States, okay, it's blue chip, it's gilt-edged, but South Africa, 11.06, surely that's an attractive yield for somebody.
It is. What's happened, though, it's getting weaker. But I agree with you. I think it will adjust. In other words, it will come back. The dollar will soon ease back. You know, at the moment, you know, it's what they call TNAC. This is Ed Jardine. That was Jardini, what's it? Yeah, sorry.
And I don't know, who is this person, Jardini or Jardini?
Ed Jardini. I think he's a well-known fund manager, commentator.
Okay.
You know, that was Liston's mate. Liston always used to quote him, or still does.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, I remember him,
And he said, TNAC, you know, there is no alternative country. In other words, the dollar remains strong. And what's happening, as the dollar gets stronger, it attracts more and more investment, and particularly away from weaker emerging countries. So it puts enormous pressure on emerging markets. So that's the story at the moment. And I think a lot of money is flowing out of emerging markets, particularly Asia. And I think we caught up in it. So it's putting pressure on us. Things are not great here. You know, economically, they're not great. And we're talking about load shedding. We talk about a whole lot of other issues here. So, you know, I think it's the strength of the dollar, but there are also other political issues as well. Why do you want to come to an emerging market in times like that? You know, that's a rhetorical question. I'm saying I'm embracing all the emerging markets. Where America is likely to get out of this first is addressing these inflation issues, is addressing, you know, growth, those kind of factors. Why do you want to stay in a weaker currency? So I think it's a hard story for emerging markets.
It's a hard story for emerging markets, but today the emerging market equity space is looking really, really good. And I'll refer specifically, obviously, to the JSE Securities Exchange. And I just wanted to give you a bit of background to this. I've got Brent crude oil up 4.5%. I've got gasoline prices up 2%. No, never mind that. What's the other one? Natural gas up 6%. Copper up 3.6%. Soybeans. Wheat is up 5.2%. The whole commodity complex has suddenly turned its colours like a chameleon from red to green. They're going through the roof. Are they oversold? Is there some fundamental basis to this? I don't know, but it's certainly boosted the JSE, which is more than 3% higher. Extraordinary move.
I wonder if it's not China. Talk about reflation there and the need to push up the economy. Well, it could be. I'm guessing. I think the oil story is Biden came back without any kind of contract.
Yeah.
You know, no commitment for OPEC or Saudis to pump out more oil. You know?
What a surprise.
I think he came back. Yeah, I know. He came back empty hand. It's a worry. Lindsay, there's a big worry about Biden. And
I
you know, each day that goes by, I get more and more concerned. Not because of Biden that he might topple over, but rather that this just opens a way for the Republicans to come in. And, you know, you've got Trump and Steve Bannon and that whole party there just hanging. And the Republicans, the central-minded Republicans or the more moderate are not doing anything. You know, they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to lose their positions. And they just go along with the story. And I think that's the big fear.
He doesn't look presidential, does he?
No.
Biden?
No.
From the time that he walks out of Air Force One to when he's sitting opposite MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, he doesn't look as though he's bossing the room, and you need to be the boss. If you're the boss, if you're the world's biggest economy, you really need to have this sort of strength and presence. Exactly right, the word presence, that's what I was looking for. And you've got Trump now coming back to the fore. I mean, he's far too old to do it, but he may appoint somebody. I get these emails from Trump because I signed up to Trump because after he'd left Twitter, because I wanted to know what he was saying. He says here, I've just got it about 10 minutes ago, it says here, friend, when I was in the White House, America had a president who put our nation first, capital letters, every single day. For the first time in a long time, power was taken from Washington and given back, capital letters, to the American people. Unfortunately, he says, or rather his team says, Joe Biden and the rest of the Washington swamp, capital letters, are working overtime to undo everything my administration accomplished. And mark my words, America will be the first again, but only with the help of my most loyal supporters. And he's, you know, in other words, he's trying to get money out of me.
Yeah.
And I always say something disparaging. I reply and say, but he is gaining momentum. Biden is losing momentum. That's what I'm
trying
to say.
Exactly. Well, the Democrats are opening the way for the Republicans. You know, the Republicans don't have to do anything because they'll just they'll work their way out of the White House and out of Congress and out of the Senate. So you need, they need to consolidate. They need to do something. But I think that's why exactly I'm not when you watch Biden, when you hear him talk and you say, well, what has he achieved? You know, what's happened? You know, what can we hang a hat on? There's not much. So my concern is, oh no, please not Trump again. You know, and also these geriatrics, it's enough already of these old men kind of running. How old's Trump? He'll be 77, he'll be 78 or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, which you is know, what no one, Biden
I mean,
is now.
When you, but when you watch him walking, you know, you think he's going to fall over, he kind of shuffles. I say, you know, walk with purpose. In other words, stride. You're a president of the United States. You know, you just say, oh, please don't fall over. You know, so, even Winston Churchill and older people, they used to walk with a sense of purpose and strength, even though they were maybe Churchill wasn't that old. And, he was in his 60s, 70s, whatever it was. Hmm. But, I mean,
he doesn't move his arms, David. He doesn't swing his arms, which would help him walk. His arms are sort of hanging there like salamis.
And he talks. You see, when he talks, I get so worried. I said, please don't mess up. Just read what they've given you. Do not go ad lib. Please, you know, because
his knowledge
is not there.
As a broadcaster, I'm very sensitive to voices and the way people deliver things. I mean, you're a good deliverer. You personalize things. You say Lindsay occasionally, and you give some passion to it. I don't know, David, he sort of, he doesn't mumble, and I know he's got a speech impediment, he's always had a stutter.
Stammer, yeah.
A stammer, a stutter, both of those two, but he doesn't put things across very well. It's almost as though he's battling to get these words out, and there's a teleprompter there for him. I mean, I think he's a very good fellow. I think he's a nice chap, but he doesn't have a presence, as you quite rightly say. It's very, very disturbing.
I only say that because it opens a way for the Republicans.
For Trump,
the last thing we want is Trump again. And he would do this out of ego, not because he's got the strength or whatever it is. It's just to show you, see, I can do it. Mm. And then we got 4 years of, oh, my God, another old man.
Yeah.
You know, you want some young blood. You want some, you know, fresh thinking. I don't know. Anyway.
But who? Who would it be? It can't be Kamala Harris.
I don't know.
She's anonymous.
I don't know whether this Manchin is any good at all. I don't know. You know, what's his name? Manchin against DeSantis or something like that. That would be a good fight.
Mm.
We'll see. I don't know. Listen, for me, American politics, like most other politics, just toxic.
Tell me about it. Again, another UK candidate will be knocked out this evening. I must say that Kimi Badenoch is very, very good. The 42-year-old black woman, and she's really, really clever. She's an engineer, digital engineer, and she doesn't stutter or stammer at all. She's very, very confident. Unfortunately, she's not well known enough for the British public, so it is going to be Rishi Sunak.
I don't mind him.
No,
I think he's got a nice presence.
Yes.
He's a very elegant looking man and comes across well. And I don't know enough about him. You know,
he's the 222nd richest man in the UK. That's what you need to know about him.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Where did he make money from?
Well, the first thing he made money from was marrying his wife, who's the daughter of an Indian multi-billionaire. That's the first thing. But also, I think he was Goldman Sachs, wasn't he? Didn't he work for Goldman Sachs?
Well, it could have been, yeah.
But anyway, he's a good chap.
I went down the lift today, and you know, I was at our offices, and I went down. I didn't know Goldman Sachs, apparently, on the 8th floor. We're on the 5th and 6th floor, and we own some of the ups there.
Yeah.
And I walked down, and I saw a young man there as well, and he had a belt.
And what do you mean a belt?
LV. Well, no, he on his belt was LV, Louis Vuitton. So I said, oh, what's on the 8th floor? He said, Goldman Sachs. I said, yeah.
Oh,
I said,
goodness.
I'm Gap. I said, my belt came from Gap.
I would go to Pep Stores tomorrow and buy a Pep Stores one and say, how do you like mine?
So that's so when you work at Goldman, you generally dress well or can afford Louis Vuitton belts. You know,
I mean, I don't want to single out Goldman Sachs, but is it that sort of culture where you have to look good and
you have to be
flashy?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you can't wear Mr. Price.
Love Mr. Price.
I like Mr. Price.
I know, exactly. You want to get a pair of running shorts like you do, you go to Mr. Price. Never mind Louis Vuitton. David, what do we do with this market? Is this a dead cat bounce? This is a serious question now.
It's still early.
Dead cat bounce or is bottom of the market being formed?
I reckon it's bottom of the market being formed.
Excellent.
I think the results that are coming out have to be good. I've been impressed by the banking results. I mean, what it does show is that the banks are solid. You know, there's no big pressure on in the U.S. banks.
But I thought all Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan did badly last week.
Well, you can look at it from that way. What I'm looking at is how solid are they? We've discussed this many times. I don't like banks because in tough markets they don't make. There's not enough activity. But what impressed me is that the quality of the balance sheet is strong. They don't need support. They don't need to raise money. You know, they don't need to make massive provisions, even though J.P. Morgan did protect themselves just in case of that. But what I'm trying to say is the banking sector is in good shape, and companies, I think, overall in good shape. And that's important. So the point I bring across, if there is expansion, if you do need to expand, you know, you do need to borrow, the banks can help you. You know, do you know what I mean? They're in a position to lend money. You know what I'm getting at? Like, yeah. I mean, they're in good shape to fund any expansion that might be needed or anything around those things. So I think when things do change, they're okay, despite the fact that things are tight. So this is not a 07-08 situation where the banks, you know, Bernanke had to come out and bail the banks out and force them to raise money and do things. They're in really good shape, despite the fact that profits are down. And I think that applies to South African banks as well. You know, we can say that. It doesn't mean I'm going to buy them because they're battling to, you know, to grow revenue. But Goldman had very good trading results, you know, which made up for the fall in investment banking. So that's where you look for the quality of the business. And I think the one thing that's coming through is that, you know, the businesses are in decent shape, despite the fact that we're looking at tougher times ahead. So I'm hoping that we get similar kinds of, I hope we get similar kinds of stories on some of the tech companies when they come out, just to show, look, we're still well-placed. No, we're not losing money. Our margins are reasonable, whatever it is. And I think that will give us just some support for the market. I'm not rushing in now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but wait a second. That's what I was going to ask you. You just said that you think the market may be forming a bottom here. So this is the time to start getting in. But you're not getting in. So you're not putting your money where your mouth is.
No.
Or rather, your client's money where your mouth is.
No.
Why?
Because you want to see the market. The bottom means that it goes sideways. It doesn't fall. It doesn't rise. It just starts to make this base. In other words, you're cementing a base. And once we get to that, that's when then a little bit of good news, and that will spark the buying.
Start to ease into the market before the rest of the herd gets in, because everyone's bearish. Everyone's saying this about geopolitics and about interest rates rising. But David Shapiro has called the bottom of the market. So you start getting in. You phone your clients and say, we've got a bit of cash, so let's start to ease it in. If you've got 100 to put in, then let's just start with 15, 20, 30 now.
Yeah.
And wait.
Sorry. Okay, so we've been in for a long time. I mean, I've been in the market exposed. So
yeah.
I'm not putting in old money. You know, in other words, where I might have cash balances left over, I'm not putting that in. But if a new client came or a client came with fresh money, yes, I would do exactly that.
Okay.
I would take a bite, definitely.
Good point. Okay.
You know, you know what I mean? So but if there's, you know, the old money that we've got and we're just saying, okay, let's just ride it and let's see what happens. And let's see where what I am doing though, Lindsay, is that we are re-looking at companies. Because we've had the adjustment, I'm now saying, okay, which companies are likely to outgrow the others? And so I will be doing switches, even though some of the businesses that we might be getting out of are not bad companies and are not vulnerable. You know, for example, it might be a bank or it might be some of the pharmaceutical companies and things like that, you know, which are just bumbling along. I would say, okay, you know, maybe let's go for a chip company, or maybe let's go for one of the tech businesses and so on. A lot of the software houses have been hit hard, you know, presenting value. So I will be doing some switches without really adding new money in.
Okay, so what are you saying? Are you saying that in a post-global health crisis world, there are some companies that have adapted and actually changed their business models, and you must have a look at them? There are some companies that will be resilient no matter what the global health crisis is or what the geopolitics are saying, maybe like Amazon or Alphabet or Apple, etc. But there are other companies that maybe they've been a little bit more nimble and flexible to what's happened, and they'll forge ahead. Is that what you're looking for? Companies that have adapted?
Yes, exactly. And are well-placed to what we see as the themes that are going to dominate the global economy in the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, which are... So, yes, it's around that. You know, sometimes you can get stuck with businesses. They're okay, but they're not going to do anything. And, you know, they're just going to bumble along, but not grow. So I've got to say, okay, which are the, you know what I mean? It's to use a football comparison.
Analogy,
analogy, sorry, that's the word I was thinking. So you want to back, you want to say, listen, I want to buy, I reckon that Chelsea are going to make it this year.
Please don't say that.
Not really. or Man City or Liverpool. I'd rather buy the Liverpool's Man City than maybe the Wolves or the Arsenals or somewhere down there. So I'm switching those allegiances to give you some kind of analogy. That's the whole thing. It doesn't mean that Arsenal or Spurs are bad, but they're not going to win the league. So I'm going to back those that I think will win the league.
I think Spurs are an outside bet for the league. I think they're an outside bet. Yeah, and I think Chelsea have made some really astute purchases. They've quietly let Rudiger go to Real Madrid. And who else has gone as well? Azpilicueta, he's gone. But they've bought some new people in. Mm. And they bought Raheem Sterling. To me, half price. I mean, he's a brilliant player. Yeah. He's going to do so well at Chelsea. He'll fit in with the Thomas Tuchel philosophy. And I think Chelsea are also an outside bet. Arsenal, I don't know, David. I mean, I love Arsenal.
We're looking top four. You know, I don't think they've got that edge. They've got some decent players there, but I don't know whether they can do better than they did last year.
How can it be you are looking towards an achievement as being in the top four? I mean, 30 years ago, when was it that Arsenal played Liverpool and they had to win?
89.
Yeah, 89. And what was his name? Thomas. Michael Thomas in the last minute burst through and scored and they won the league. Yeah. They should be looking to win the league, not get in the top four, don't you think?
Yeah, I wish. I don't think they've got the squad. I don't think they've got the depth yet to do that. They need a few. When I say talisman, they need the Steven Gerrards. They need the Roy Keane. They need someone in their team, the Vieiras, you know, that can lift.
With the presence.
Lift, you know. You know, like De Bruyne, there are chaps on that field that make the big difference. And I always love a team with those kind of players in, you know, where the Roy of the Rovers, where they're down. And, you know, boy, you know that they're going to win. You know that they've got someone that will come through and say, listen, Ronaldo's like that. You know, even at his age.
He's a showboater. And
showboater, but he scores goals.
Yes, I know, but at the expense of the team. Goals. He scores 27 goals in a season, but the rest of the team is so scared of him. And everyone says, well, didn't he have a great season? Where did Manchester United finish? Fifth, sixth? It's nothing. It's rubbish. I must say, I'm interested to see how Erik ten Hag will do there, the new Dutch manager, because he was really, really good at Ajax. He may be out of his depth at Man U, because although Ajax is a huge team, Old Trafford is a temple for Man United supporters. We'll see. Man City with Erling Haaland.
They're always good.
I mean, see anyone stopping that. He's a beast, this man. He's a machine. He'll score 30 goals this season, and that will win them the league again, I think.
Yeah. They wouldn't have let Sterling go or Jesus go without knowing that was Haaland's the man.
Exactly. They're changing their policy now. Yeah. Normally
Sterling, I don't think had. I love Sterling and he could break through, but I don't think he had the kind of control that that could keep his place. But he'll be great at Chelsea. I mean, you know, he can upset defenses and that's great. You know, but I don't know. I still back Man City. I still think they've got very solid quality. I'm just sorry Rodriguez gone. I didn't know he'd gone from Chelsea. I loved him. He was tough.
He was very good. Again, he commanded the defence. And now at Real Madrid, which I hate because I'm a Barcelona supporter. But, David, you know what's clever about Pep Guardiola and Man City is that he says, OK, I'm buying Erling Haaland and I got him at a bargain basement price compared to other players. And so we're going to change our system. So I'll get rid of Jesus, and he'll go to Arsenal. Jesus. And Raheem Sterling, although they love each other, he'll go to Chelsea. And there will be a completely different Manchester City formation and tactical.
Who's the backup there? I mean,
I don't know.
Have they got anybody up front there? I don't know who else they've got.
I don't know. I'm not that technical. But all I know is that this chap, he's like, what's his name, Lukaku. But with
skill.
But with skill, exactly. But with he's going to take the defences apart. If that thing came running at me, this Scandinavian Viking that came running at me, and I was a defender, I promise you, I'd run for the hills. He's a beast. Okay, David. So what are you doing? You're not buying. You're not selling. You're just waiting.
I'm waiting, but I mean sometimes you just have to be patient. You don't have to be. You know, if you're impatient, you lose money, and just waiting. I'm very interested in the kind of results that we're going to get from the tech companies. I'm a bit nervous. You know what I mean? A bit edgy, because I think if it goes the wrong way, it could have a major negative effect. But I mean, if it's and analysts, sometimes are a little too optimistic on their forecast. You know, I wish they'd be a little more realistic, but so far so good. You know, and also we have to work out what they say about, you know, how they see things down the line. So I think it's, you know, the next couple of weeks are important. So I don't want to preempt these results. I'd rather they came out, studied them, and then said, okay, because if there is upside, even if I miss a few percentage points, at least you know it's, you know, you're on solid ground. It's been a tough, hey? I must say it's been a very tough period. You know, when I say tough, it's 6 months of just reading, you know, watching and working out. And for clients, they get not impatient, but you can understand it's their money at risk, and you've got to constantly, you know, have a story or show that you're in command. And that's where the reading comes, and we look for those signs all the time.
And this week, David, is important. You talk about the next few weeks, but this week is very important. You've got IBM, you've got Netflix, and you've got Johnson & Johnson, which is interesting because it's a defensive stock. And I was going to ask you, but we've run out of time. We'll do that tomorrow. But Johnson & Johnson, a defensive company, would you go for Netflix or Johnson & Johnson? Actually, that's a good question to end this. Which one would you go for?
Johnson & Johnson. No.
Exactly.
No contest. Yeah. Just no contest.
I think they're spending too much money on too many business productions, and I think people are getting fed up with it.
Yeah. And J&J, I think they're underestimated business. They could split up into 3-4 different businesses, and all of them do well.
Yeah.
From what I call body parts, you know, the devices, to the ethical drugs, you know, to over the counter stuff. It's a big business, you know. You don't realize it's a top 10 market cap, yeah.
Monstrous. Okay, David, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, evening. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.